Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Yesterday, Pope Francis wrote his first official document as Pope. In that document, he called for big changes in the Roman Catholic Church, saying it needs to rethink some of its rules and customs.
And he was outspoken on issues of income inequality and very critical of what he called trickle-down economics.
Eileen Burke Sullivan joins us now. She's Associate Professor of Theology. She's the holder of the Barbara Reardon Heaney Chair in Theology at Creighton University in Nebraska. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with how the Pope communicated this message. It was an apostolic exhortation. What exactly is that?
Well, an apostolic exhortation is one of several kinds of papal communications. Usually they're attached specifically to a meeting that the bishops have had with the Pope earlier. So there's a synod or a meeting of the bishops last year, and they discussed the new evangelization or the evangelization process, the work of proclaiming the gospel in culture. And so the papal apostolic exhortation is a kind of a summary and a reflection on and a kind of official gathering of teaching about the content of that meeting. It's a major teaching document.
And in this document, there were a lot of things, any one of which could have gotten headlines, and he put a lot of them in there. Let's start with the evangelizing thing. One thing I thought he said was interesting was, we're kind of downers when we're evangelizing. I think there was a line something like, when you're evangelizing, when we're spreading the faith, we shouldn't look like we just came from a funeral.
Exactly. He's very strong about the fact that the medium, I mean, he doesn't say this way, but he's coming out of the medium is the message. If we are grumpy and dour and feeling defeated, we will never accomplish the gospel, which is full of joy.
And one of the big things, one of the big headline getters was challenging the Catholic Church's top-down hierarchy, and that's very significant coming from the person at the top of that hierarchy.
At the top of the top-down, yes, it is. Yes, he really has, and he has said this a number of times, even before this document came out. This is kind of a summary of some other things he said, but he has said in no uncertain terms that we need to return to a way of, or to a practice that is more collegial in terms of consultative and decision-making that is more regional and effectively takes into account local culture and local community.
This is a debate that's gone on, like a lot of things you talked about, for years, for centuries in the Catholic Church, isn't it?
Yes. Actually, structural debates particularly have been a big part of the tradition or part of the history of the life of the church, which makes sense because, for one thing, it's an old community. It's a couple thousand years, and it's gone through all kinds of political contexts. You know, all sorts of social political contexts have surrounded the church, from the Roman Empire all the way through the feudal system of the Middle Ages and the rise of nation states and then the development of democracy and so on. So if you follow sort of world history or cultures, development of cultures, you can see where the ecclesial community in many respects adopted kind of parallel types of structures.
But there's part of the argument against that is the idea that the church and the hierarchy should be a conservative institution, not politically, but in that we maintain values despite what might be changing in a particular culture or the polls of the day or the fashions of the time. Is that a tension that's going to be hard to resolve for the Pope?
It's never resolvable. It's a consistent tension. And actually, if you look closely at Catholic teaching, it's always tensive. It's always a both and. There are two sides to sort of every kind of statement. And so you're going to see this throughout the document. Actually, as he talks, he'll say, you know, we have to go here, but we have to be aware that this is true, and so forth and so on. So you're going to find these tensions. And yes, there is a tremendous tension in reading the signs of the times, as the Constitution on the Church in the Modern World called it back at Vatican II in the 60s, how do we look at the modern world and be church within the culture and time that we are. And then, and yet, how do we hold these transcendent teachings and values of Jesus?
And now he's calling for a more humble attitude as part of changing this leadership style, not just in practice changing it, but really changing an attitude, it sounds like. Is this something that you think was shaped from his fairly humble background and maybe being the first Latin American pope?
Oh, I think it's very definitively he reflects the fact that he comes out of a culture where a massive part of the population are poor, and the ministry of the church is very often with the poorest of the poor. And so there's a very powerful sense of the need to recognize that if we're going to reach every human person, you've got to somehow be to them in a way that they can hear and see and value. And if the church comes across as distant and know-it-all and pompous and separate or above, that is very off-putting to the human condition.
Again, this is not a new debate. A whole monastic orders were started over the issue of how flashy should the church be, how distant, right, how connected with the poor, and of course the Protestant splitting off from the church.
Absolutely. So in fact, historically, when the ecclesial community, when the Catholic ecclesial community has forgotten that its mission is to address the poorest and the humblest in many, many respects. I mean, Jesus himself came among the least politically powerful and among the poorest community in that least politically powerful body. So, I mean, he came into time and history not among the wealthy and the powerful, but among the people of the land. And that's the message that we have to keep iterating, because it is true that as you know, we are in favor of the progress of peoples in a very positive way, and the development of human enjoyment of this world or comfort in this world, but not at the expense of others.
And Pope Francis is saying these things. Is this something that had been a movement in the church recently with his predecessors, or is he really, with his humble tone, with this idea of getting away from the rigid hierarchy, is he really setting off a new path in recent history?
Well, it's not entirely new. No, I mean, it's a recurrent theme, and as you pointed out, in the church's history, and probably most recently as the Second Vatican Council, within the 4 years that it met in the mid 60s of the last century, from 62 to 65, the church really there was a huge impetus toward being a poor church for the poor. And that was even embedded in the constitution on the church in the modern world, that the church needs to really redress the poverty of the world and to be itself a witness to the poor, in the sense of material poverty is not itself a good, but material poverty helps us recognize that God's in charge and we're not. Sometimes when we have great material comfort or wealth, we think that material comfort or wealth makes us invulnerable. And the real message of simplicity of life, or even poverty, is that we are dependent. We're dependent, first of all, on God, and then we're dependent on brothers and sisters.
Well, following on the theme of poverty, one of the things that I think captured the most attention in this document from Pope Francis is his comment on capitalism, on trickle-down economics. He quotes a Catholic theologian, St. John, and I'm sorry I can't pronounce the last part, but here's the quote, "Not to share one's wealth with the poor is to steal from them and to take away their livelihood."
That's right. Exactly. And I think this document, he is about as sharp as he could possibly be. Now, interestingly enough, John Paul II, probably 25 or 30 years ago, said some very similar things. But it didn't have the kind of, hearing that this has.
And not just Pope John Paul II. Other predecessors recently have talked about poverty. They've been critical of capitalism and material wealth. Why is Pope Francis, though, more outspoken? Is he laying it out there more strongly, maybe, than his immediate predecessors?
You know, I think if you think about his immediate predecessors, they come out of European culture and European middle class. Even John Paul II, while he was in a second world, you might say, country in Poland growing up. His family was not among the poorest of the poor. They were educated. They were middle class in a communist society, which wasn't, it wasn't wealthy by any stretch by our standards, but it was, he was not, he didn't worry about where his food came from next, the next day or that day. And Benedict came out of a scholarly family in Germany, and I don't think probably much of his life he ever had to worry much about where his next meal was coming from. Not that he wouldn't be aware, excuse me, of the world's poor and so on. But when you minister as Francis has done in barrios, huge communities in Latin America, where not only the next meal, but the next anything for human beings is really questionable. And every person you're talking to is living on a life and death edge of poverty. And that if you have anything and don't share it or give it away, you somehow would know that you're depriving people. I mean, he has come out of a ministerial culture. I think his own family was reasonably comfortable. Middle class, you might say, in a culture that's largely poor and wealthy. He was of a smallish population of middle class, but he was thrust into a ministerial context as the bishop of as the auxiliary bishop of Buenos Aires, of one of the poorest sections of the city, and this is one of the poorest sections of one of the poorest cities in the world. So he was really dealing with people who are living on garbage heaps, and he could not but know that what this does to the human condition.
Eileen Burke Sullivan is with us. She's associate professor in the Department of Theology at Creighton University in Nebraska, talking about a document from Pope Francis raising a lot of issues around the world.
And we were curious about what you think about what the Pope had to say and the direction it seems to indicate that the Catholic Church might be moving in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.
We're talking to Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's associate professor of theology at Creighton University in Nebraska about the new document from Pope Francis, the Apostolic Exhortation, raising issues of income inequality, changing the church hierarchy, and a lot more.
And we'd like to know what you think about that. What do you think about the Pope reaching out, saying political topics, talking about income inequality, talking about trickle-down economics? Are you interested to hear a Pope talking about this? And what do you think it says about the direction the Catholic Church might be moving in? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org.
Which your calls in a couple minutes. But first, Eileen, how much of an influence do you think an announcement like this from Pope Francis has on the way Catholics think, approach the world here in the United States?
Well, what I would love to have people do is actually read the whole text. Now, it's relatively lengthy, so they may be more likely to read summaries of it and that sort of thing. But I think that it will cause serious Catholics to ask very serious questions about their own attitudes and values, about their own spending habits, about the way our parishes are organized, and the way whether we're outward concerned or just concerned about ourselves. I would think it would raise questions in my colleagues and fellow co-religionists' minds about health care, which is certainly a major topic today, about a number of other issues, political and social issues that we face in the United States, and not the least of which, of course, is the care of the poor and the outcast. And the Pope makes no bones about the fact that he wants countries to be compassionate to migrants, to those who are not documented peoples, that are forced for economic reasons and otherwise out of their countries. He wants us to be very conscientious about the desperate need for health care, and particularly for the poorest and the weakest and so forth. So, I mean, there are many things that we could meditate on or chew on in the text. I don't know how easily people will hear it. I think people who agree with him will be thrilled, and people who are, you know, coming from another perspective will either be suspicious or at least challenged.
We'll go to our callers now. We have Adam with us in Manitowoc. Adam, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, great discussion. I'm not myself a Roman Catholic, but I've been following this particular issue and debate for many years, back to John Paul II's writings, including to the current pope. My concern is that when popes like Francis make these sort of statements about caring for the poor, we automatically assume that they're talking about state-run welfare programs, when it seems to me that Francis and other popes have followed a long line of Catholic thought, such as from G.K. Chesterton, Hilaire Belloc, drawing a middle road between socialism and capitalism, and that being distributism. So I'd like to get your guest comments on that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Adam. Eileen, what do you think?
Well, I think that your caller is correct in saying that that there's a temptation to immediately think of, you know, of political or social programs. On the other hand, we can't discount political and social programs if that's a way that people are generally taken care of. I think you have to deal with various cultures and the way they deal, you know, the way they respond. One of the things that Francis is going after is a social system that, in the character of the social system, whether it's an economic system or a political system, that there is a body of human beings who are disposable. And whether those are the poor, or whether those are women, or whether those are people of color, or whether those are undocumented peoples, or whoever the disposable group is, we systematically reject them through the social and political systems. And that's where political systems need to change. Now, I would say in this document, the Pope is very, very strong that persons and communities of faith and so on have to take personal and corporate responsibility for addressing world issues and local issues of poverty. So the local and the world, if you will.
We'll go now to Perry in Milwaukee. Perry, hi.
Good afternoon. My comment is, it seems to me, first of all, I'm an Orthodox Christian. Mm-hmm. And the two previous popes, to Pope Francis, were very adamant on trying to get the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church back into unity. And it has appeared to me that a papacy of Francis was actually, the stage was actually set under Benedict XVI by doing things like rolling back limbo and some of those things, and even prior to his papacy, when he kind of kept John Paul II on the proper track, the proper Catholic track. And I personally, as an Orthodox Christian, would love to see this man, Pope Francis, as primus inter pares of the worldwide Christian Church.
Wow.
And I was just wondering what your guest thoughts are on Benedict XVI actually laying the groundwork for Francis and the direction he's taking the Catholic Church in now.
Perry, a lot there, but Eileen, Pope Francis as first among equals, not just head of the Catholic Church, but in some way reuniting the Catholic and Orthodox faiths?
Well, I will tell you that he has made tremendous efforts already in that direction and tremendous strides, and he's the first pope to have attracted several Orthodox patriarchs to his installation as pope in 1,000 years. So, and part of that's because he's built deep personal friendships with Orthodox leaders in various parts of the world through the years as Archbishop of Buenos Aires and so on. So there is a foundation in his own ministry. But you're right that Benedict and John Paul II saw, and actually John 23rd prior to that, really worked very, very hard to begin to lay the groundwork toward dialogue and relationship to reopen doors and to find ways of ameliorating some of the differences and divisions that have plagued us for 1,000 years between the East and the West.
Thanks for the call, Perry. We've got Matt in Tomo with us now. Matt, hi.
Hi, guys. It was interesting because the very first Christians were the poor people, and I believe what we've gotten away from is the fact that the church has neglected its responsibility. You know, we were the first ones to have the first hospitals and first orphanages and things like that, and we've kind of neglected our responsibility to be the church, and we just said to the government, you guys do it for us. And I think what Francis may be getting at, like you indicated earlier, Eileen, is that we want to take some of this responsibility back, the spirit of generosity and, giving an immigrant worker like myself. What I did is I told a guy whose van broke down. I'm like, I'm just doing little things like that to help out. And so we just need more of that kind of spirit. So.
All right, Matt, thanks for the call. Eileen, is he capturing a lot of the intent, do you think, of Pope Francis?
I think there's both in there. I mean, I think that we really have to hear the personal responsibility that Francis calls everyone to care for his or her brothers and sisters that are surrounding you. So the poor in your community are your responsibility to some extent. Now, do we mediate that only through private charity, or do we mediate that through a systemic consciousness of holding up and caring for the poor publicly? In the United States, we've kind of struggled with both. We've found ways to grant tax deductions for those who give charity, but we also have tried to develop some social programs when the problem is too great for personal or private charity to cover. So I think we have to be open to the fact that there's not a single answer, but what there is a profound personal and corporate responsibility.
Eileen, thank you so much for joining us today.
You are very welcome.
That's Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's an associate professor of theology at Creighton University in Nebraska.
Our guest says it's time to rewrite the United States Constitution. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.